Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call this hearing of the Minnesota House of Representatives Education Finance Committee to order. I'd like to welcome you all to this committee hearing. This is a special field hearing for us from the Capitol. I'm Representative Jim Dabney. I have the privilege of chairing this committee for this biennium. When Speaker Hortman took office, she made it very clear to those of us with the privilege to hold gavels at the legislature that we were expected to be accessible to Minnesota, and that part of that meant not waiting for Minnesota to come to us, but for us to go to Minnesota. And so there have been a number of field hearings by different committees where the committees leave the state capitol in St. Paul and go to different places. This one, obviously, today here in Windham. Today, the House Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee is meeting in St. Cloud. About 2 weeks ago, our Corrections and Public Safety Committee held the first ever legislative hearing in a state prison to hear primarily from corrections staff about the experiences and the needs of staff who keep us safe there. So we wanted to come out and we wanted to hear directly from Minnesota about your experiences of public education, because we believe that every child in Minnesota deserves a world-class public education. I want to speak specifically to the students for a minute. I'm thrilled that you're here. One of the things that we've done as a committee is tried to really center our deliberations on students, on youth, including one of our early session hearings was, with a brief exception of the adult who set up much of the hearing, a hearing dedicated entirely to hearing from students from around the state, because it's your experience of public education that needs to be folded into our deliberations. If you were expecting something you might see like on CNN or Fox, where there's a lot of people, you know, yelling at each other, I'm going to disappoint you here. At least I expect us members to disappoint. So, to some of that, because this is a hearing of the Minnesota House of Representatives, we are being audio taped. Ms. Axford, thank you for staffing the audio. That audio will be eventually sent to the Minnesota Historical Society, where 50 years from now, if somebody wants to know what people in Windham were thinking about levy equalization in 2019, they get to listen to the tape and find out. Colin Lovell, thank you for having the camera on us as well. Appreciate that. What you'll hear is, instead of the yelling at each other thing, mostly, is as the chair, think of me as the teacher. You've got to raise your hand to be recognized. I actually was a middle school social studies teacher for 17 years. So my instincts are start on time, end on time, and bathroom passes. I'm going to try to hold off on the bathroom pass instinct for today. But just like in a class where you have to raise your hand, people have to raise their hand, be recognized. You'll find us referring to each other. While casually, we're all first name basis. It will be Representative Juergens, Mr. Chair, things like that. We maintain the decorum so that we're able to focus on the ideas that are being discussed and the bills being presented and not the personalities, although we all generally do pretty well together. You will not see us take any votes today, and I'm sorry to disappoint. As a finance committee, our main job is at the end of the session or a little bit before, is to assemble all of the bills that have to do with education finance. Because the leg bone is connected to the knee bone. Any of you, I know there's anatomy classes offered here at the high school. All the pieces of education finance kind of fit together. If you spend a little more money over here, you spend a little less money over there. If you change how you spend the money or raise the money here, it changes other things. So we assemble all the bills into an omnibus bill, a comprehensive bill on education finance. What that means is we're not voting yes or no on the bills we're going to hear today. Instead, we'll wait until they're all packaged together, and then we'll debate and discuss the total package and vote on that. So, again, little wild, little crazy, and no votes today. I apologize to anybody who was looking forward to that. A lot of gratitude from the committee and appreciation for all the work that went into this. So thank you to the superintendent. Thank you to the middle school and high school principals who all made this work for us today. A big thank you to our staff. The staff at the Minnesota Legislature are kind of divided into three parts. The two caucuses, the DFL and the GOP, both have caucus staff that serve their members exclusively. And then we have nonpartisan staff that serve all members equally. So I want to put a big shout out to the air traffic controller for the day, Ms. Burt, the committee administrator, who put a huge amount of work into all of the aspects of getting us on the bus at 7 a.m. and getting us to Wyndham and putting together all the schedules and connecting with everybody who is looking to testify today and has done a lot of that work. Ms. Sunderland is the committee legislative assistant. She keeps track of things as they're going through the day, maintains the minutes, and keeps me on time. I think I'm already off time a little bit, but she'll get me back on it. We have from the DFL caucus, Mars Rudchristi Beltrandi, who's our researcher, and Gina Vega from our media department, because part of the way that we are transparent and accessible is to get out into the media, whether it's the professional media or our social media. From the GOP staff, Jody Withers, thank you for being here. And then our nonpartisan staff. These folks are critical. They make the institution run while we do other things. And it's Tim Strom and Emily Adrians who are both here. And we appreciate all the staff who make this place, this hearing, and the legislature happen. I'd like to move next then to committee members introducing themselves. I'm going to start on my left, your right. Representative Hamilton, thank you for joining us. He is not a member of the Education Finance Committee, but when we first scheduled this hearing, my first call was to Representative Hamilton because we knew that it was one of his communities that was hosting us, and he was on it right away. Welcome, sir.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I want to welcome you and welcome the other members of the committee to the wonderful community of Wyndham. I want to thank everybody for being here, and thank you for hosting this as well. You know, I live just 8 short miles away from here. So when you're talking about getting up very early and getting on the bus, I was able to sleep in this morning. So it was really nice. So I just want to rub that in a little bit. But no, thank you so much for coming out. And also thank you to staff, both partisan and nonpartisan staff, not only for being here today, but for everything you do back at the Capitol as well. We couldn't do it without you. So thank you so much. I would like to say to the testifiers, we had a wonderful, wonderful meal, being able to just sit down and visit. And to the testifiers, don't be nervous at all. I know a few of you said, well, I had a little bit of nerves and some butterflies. Don't. These are wonderful, wonderful people, and they will treat you with respect. And I'd also like to say, always go through the chair. So when you come up to testify, make sure you always go through the chair, okay? So welcome. You'll do great. Don't worry about it at all. Don't be nervous because, like I said, everybody is absolutely wonderful. So once again, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. If the other members could identify their names and then where they're from, please.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. My name is Steve Sandell. I'm a Democratic representative from the city of Woodbury and Twin Cities area, and thanks very much to the students with whom I had a chance to talk with at lunch, and thanks very much to the teachers and staff who are here today. This is a great opportunity for us.
Hi, everyone. My name is Heather Edelson. I represent Edina, and those are my team members that live from Wyndham. Yes! We had such a great time at lunch, and I'm so excited to be here.
I'm State Representative Paul Marquardt. I represent District 4B, and that's the counties of Clay, Norman, and Becker County. And I still teach when I'm not in the legislature. I teach social studies and have a college concurrent class, and I've done that for 35 years. And Mr. Carlson, who's over there, back a few years ago, he did his student teaching in Dilworth, where I was teaching and actually observed my classroom. But great to be here, and the conversation with the students at lunchtime was great, so thanks for your hospitality.
My name is Brittany Sunderland. I'm the committee legislative assistant for the Education Finance Division, and largely my job, as Chair Dabney said, is to support him, the committee, and then also Ms. Sarah Burt, who is the committee administrator, just kind of make sure everything goes along as it is supposed to. And then we do also keep the public record. So everything that's ever handed out in any of the committees is available for public record, going back through all the bienniums in the library there, the House of Representatives.
There you go. Thank you.
All right. I think I'll just...
Oh, yes.
That's really loud. Hi, I'm Representative Cheryl Joachim. I represent Hopkins in St. Louis Park, and I'm the Education Policy Chair. So I'm going to be putting together a big education policy bill, or small, and kind of rolling it into the finance bill as well, so we can talk about finance and policy together, because they also fit together very well. I also, during the interim, I work in the schools as well, usually as a special education para. So great to be back in a school again, and thank you for the conversation at lunch. And I have to put a plug in for one of the bill ideas our table came up with to expand e-learning days to 7 instead of 5.
Hi, my name is Ruth Richardson, and I represent District 52B, which includes Mendota Heights, Amber Grove Heights, Sunfish Lake, and Egan. And I just want to thank everyone for their hospitality and hosting us today.
Hi, my name is Lori Pryor. I represent Eden Prairie and Minnetonka. I also want to thank the wonderful companions that I had for lunch. It's probably the best conversation I've had in a meal in ages, so I really appreciate it, and I am really glad that we're here today.
Hi, I'm Representative Tony Juergens from District 54B, which is the southeast metro area. It includes Cottage Grove, Afton, and Hastings. And if I nod off today, it's because my wife and I were at the Elton John concert last night at the Target Center. I got about 4 hours of sleep, which should be enough. But no, it's a pleasure to be here today. I thank the chair for organizing this and for all of you for hosting us and welcoming us to your school today.
Hi, everyone. My name is Representative Carly Katiza-Watoon. I represent 48B, which is the majority of the city of Eden Prairie, the other half of Lori's district. And I'm really glad to be here today. Had to refrain myself from walking into Spanish class and starting to talk to everybody. So, yeah.
Hi, I'm John Hewitt. I represent Rosemount, Apple Valley, and a little town called Coates. And I do want to say that I just dropped the Future Farmers of America bill yesterday, so I'm looking forward to representing you at the Minnesota House, too. That was one of the bills that I'll be sponsoring this year. So thanks for dinner, for the folks that shared with me their stories at dinner, and we'll see how the day goes.
Hi, everyone. I'm State Representative Mary Kunish-Podi, and I represent 41B, which is Columbia Heights and Hilltop, St. Anthony Village, and New Brighton. It's just a suburb just above downtown Minneapolis and between St. Paul. I sit on both the education policy and the finance committee, so I get the best of both worlds and a little, hopefully stick my finger in both of those end products. And when I'm not at the legislature, I am a library media specialist at a middle school. So it's good to walk through your library and to see all the good work that's going on here. Thank you.
Thank you. And I've been advised that I may need to offer a little translation. When Representative Hewitt says he dropped the FFA bill, the bill's fine. What it means is he introduced it. If he dropped it on the floor by accident, he picked it back up and put it in to the hopper, so it'll be introduced on Monday.
And the hopper.
Mr. Chair, freshman.
We'll catch a little slack, Representative. We're going to start with a couple of panels of speakers so that we can hear your voices, and we're going to begin with a panel of students. And I've got on the list Ileana, is it Tare?
Yes.
Very good. Bridget Beall? Okay, this is not my strong suit, folks. Parker Bramstead and Carter Squires. So if you would please come forward. What I will ask you to do, have a seat. You're fine. You're doing great. What I will ask each of you to do is when you're about to speak, introduce yourself with your name. And then proceed, because as I said earlier, this is being audio taped. The audio tape needs to know who's talking. So who's up first? And we are, in order to get as many voices in, we're asking the panel to limit your comments to 3 minutes. And if you may see Ms. Sunderland throw up a 30-second sign. Okay. So please introduce yourself and continue with your testimony. Thank you.
Chair Dabney and Education of Finance Committee. I am Eliana Todick. I am a senior here at Windham Area High School. I'm very excited to share my message and my high school experience with you all. I just want to say thank you so much for coming here today, and I just feel so honored to be in your presence. Now, I didn't grow up in Windham. I grew up in Kindred, North Dakota, which is similar in size to Windham, but when I moved here in seventh grade, I noticed that there was a big difference. There's much more diversity here in Windham than there is in small town Kindred, North Dakota. It was really nice to see more races and different cultures being a student of color, and it was really encouraging to see those people be successful. There is more diversity, not just in the races, but also in the activities that are offered here. For example, I have been very active in the fine arts and a little bit active in athletics. And so I feel like being able to be in multiple activities at once makes me a more well-rounded person, and I have more confidence being in different situations because of those opportunities. I have also been able to take multiple courses, college courses, through Mankato State University and Southwest Minnesota State University, which has helped me really prepare for the following year as I go to college next year. I plan to go to Luther College and become an elementary education teacher. And I feel that those courses have really prepared me for the coursework and like the load that I'm going to face in college and in the following years, and will help me throughout my life. And so I feel like Windham has really given me many opportunities and good preparation for the rest of my life and the next coming years especially. Thank you for the opportunity to share my experience with you, and I would love to answer any questions that you may have. I feel so honored to be in front of you today.
Thank you, Ms. Todd. I think we'll hold any questions the committee may have until we've heard from all four of you.
Oh, sweet. Okay. Mr. Chair Dabney and Education Finance Committee, as Eliana said, first and foremost, I want to say thank you so much for taking your time to be here today. We really are honored to, you know, have you here. And my name is Bridget Beal, and I'm a junior here at Windham. And I moved to Windham when I was in sixth grade, and actually came in as a very shy and timid person. Obviously very different. I mean, if you were to ask any of my teachers today, I think they would all tell you that they can't really get me to be very quiet, to be honest. But anyway, that brings me to a really important point I want to talk about today, which is my relationship with my teachers, you know? My personal experiences with them, you know, it's actually gotten to the point where I don't just see my teachers as just teachers. I see a lot of them as, you know, my mentors. Because I know that for sure I can go up to the majority of them and talk to them about stuff that doesn't even have to do with school. You know, look for advice and things like that. And that's a really great thing to have, honestly. And I think that emphasizes the importance of having those high-quality teachers in our high schools, in our schools in general. And for me, I don't think I would be here testifying in front of you if it weren't for the encouragement that I've received from everyone here. And coming in and being encouraged to join all of these activities, you know, student government, musical, speech, all of these things, have really changed me into the person that I am today. So once again, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak before you, and thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Beal.
Good afternoon. My name is Parker Bramstead. I'm a junior here at Windham Area High School. I'm also a student representative for the Career and Technical Education Expansion Project. An investment in technical education here at Windham would not only benefit students, it would also benefit the community. Currently in Minnesota, there is a great demand for employees with backgrounds and knowledge with technical skills, and expanding CTE would let Windham improve and expand exposure to careers and skilled trades. During first semester of this year, I took Intro to Manufacturing and Engineering. Our teacher, Mr. Johnson, set up times for students to go out to Fast Global Solutions every Tuesday through Thursday for two class periods to learn about the basics of manufacturing. We also went to implement dealers and around the community and learned the opportunities that are out there for diesel technicians. one message is very clear from both of these industries is that there's a high need for employees with technical and skilled backgrounds. Most students without technical programs offered in high school do not exist, or do not know these jobs exist, nor get introduced to them, and they would not know that they're good at them and can make a good living with them. And the challenge for employers is to find candidates for these trades so that is so large, they spend money filling the gap that lack of school programs has created. I believe increasing access of students to career technical education courses earlier will help prepare students for the workforce that currently has a large demand for technical skills and help Minnesota be competitive in hiring quality people. My future plans are to pursue a career as a diesel technician, and without valuable skills and experiences I've gained this career, I would still be undecided. Imagine what this expansion could do to help so many other students find themselves and their career path. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bramstedt. Mr. Squires.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And like you said, my name is Carter Squires. I'm a senior here at Wyndham Area High. I'm pretty sure I'm the only one on this panel to have been born here and received all my formal education here, so I got the whole experience. I've been involved in many extracurricular activities, including some athletics, and most recently I've been focused on the fine arts a lot. Last summer I had the opportunity to attend Boys State at St. John's University, and I've also had the opportunity to take concurrent enrollment classes here at Wyndham, which I received credits from Southwest Minnesota State University and Minnesota State University. The concurrent enrollment classes will give me 32 college credits before I get to college, assuming that I pass all the college classes I'm taking now. I've been able to complete many of my generals in math, English, and social classes that will transfer to Dakota State University, where I plan on majoring in computer science. So if all goes well, I should start college as a sophomore. So that'll be pretty good, and then I'll be able to pick probably the higher demand classes for my major first, because they usually go on seniority there. And then I want to touch on the fact that one thing the school does really well, and I think it really does its activities really well. In bigger schools, when you go out for sports or the fine arts, you usually kind of have to be pretty narrowed down onto one of them and pretty good at one of them if you want to like really get into that. And I think Wyndham here does a really good job of being open, and you can be in a multitude of things. For example, I'm in the musical, speech, golf, and I can't even remember all the activities I'm in. I'm in so much. But I think that's one thing the school does really well here. And, yeah, I think that's all I have to say. So thank you, committee, for coming here and letting us testify.
Thank you, Mr. Squires. Questions from the committee for the student panel? Representative Kunish-Padin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for Ileana. It's not so much a question, but I would like, as a teacher myself, I'm wondering what it is that inspires you to become a teacher. And the reason I ask is because I'm carrying a bill that would create a easier pathway for teachers or students of color to become teachers, because one of the things that we realize throughout our state is that the teaching population does not very well reflect the students in the classroom with their experiences and their cultures and the great things that they bring, you know, their life experiences to the classroom. And so I would like to encourage you to look into something like that, but I would also like to hear from you what it is that inspires you to go on to become a teacher.
Ms. Todd.
Yes, that's a very good question. I actually have been a lifeguard at our local pool for 3 years, and this past summer I decided to get my WSI training, water safety instructor training, and become a swimming lessons teacher. And like from the minute I started, I just fell in love with teaching and being with the kids. And when you see them grasp a concept or like that spark goes off, it's just like a really amazing feeling. And I loved it. And so then this year, our school was introduced to the new class, Intro to Education, which is also a college class, and so I decided to take that, and we got to have kind of like a job shadow every single week that you would go to I chose a third grade classroom that I would shadow every week, and I really got to form a good connection with the students, and I got to teach them, and it was amazing. And so I decided that this was probably the career path for me. I felt really comfortable in it. And I think also as like a woman of color, you don't see so many teachers, especially in rural areas, of people of color. And so I think that it would be an inspiration for other people to go into that field, especially because there is a lack of educators right now. So thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Testifiers, thank you again for the stories that you shared with us and the perspective that you shared with us. We really appreciate it. I took notes. You can test me. The question I have for you is, as representatives of the state, we're always thinking about how do we compete with other states? How do we recruit people to come to fill the jobs that we have available here? So what could you tell us that we can share and what we need to really focus on? So you can say, hey, here I am, a young person pursuing something after high school, and you can go any place in the country. So something for you that you could tell, other young people, come to Minnesota or stay in Minnesota. stay put. Raise your families here. What do you think is important for us to focus on as representatives to keep our state strong?
That's a tough question.
Mr. Bramstead.
Thank you. That's a good question. I think in my background, I've always grown up having manufacturing and all sorts of different tech and skill-based training or skill-based jobs in my life, and I've realized over the years that there is a great demand for people like that know how to weld and how to work on cars. And I think making jobs and careers like that more open and available for students to take advantage of, they'll know that's what they can do and they can make a great living off of it. And I think just familiarizing students and preparing them for the future with jobs like that would be a great addition and help people stay in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Yuakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I heard one of the students, I think it was Ms. Beal, mention having great relationships with teachers. And as we fund our higher education institutions who are training teachers, what are some of the things the students should look at and how that interaction would go and what we can be telling the next generation of teachers that they need to do?
Yes, I love that question. personally, what I love best about my relationships with these teachers are being able to have that ability to joke around with the students, but at the same time, have been close enough to be able to let them know that you have expectations for them, being close enough to speak to them and know what they're capable of doing, and at the same time pushing them to reach for things that they didn't think they would be able to do. And that's a big thing for me. Thank you.
Wonderful. Representative Edelson, last question for the student panel.
Hi, students. I'm so excited. I love students. I remember being in high school, which was a long time ago. Let's not talk about that. I was so impressed with your garden tower room coming from Edina. We don't have that. I'm so impressed. Your technical manufacturing and engineering program is also really impressive. I guess, I just want to get to tests because we all love talking about tests, right? What do you guys think about the MCAs? Be honest.
Mr. Squires.
I think they're a pretty good indication of kind of how you're doing in school. I mean, me personally, it's always been a nice thing to, be able to take a test and kind of see where you're at in comparison to everybody else to know, like, and especially it's good to show your parents so that, like, if you do need help or if you are good, Sorry, I thought someone was saying my name. must be hearing things now. Anyways, yeah, but I think it's a really good indication, and yeah, it's just really good for the parents and the students to know kind of where they're at in comparison to Minnesota, and it's really good just kind of as a checking point to see where you're at. All right.
And I'll add on, I'll add on to that. I went to school in Texas and California, and I think the MCAs low-key give us, like, bragging rights because we're very advanced academically from what I've seen, very advanced. So I think it's good to see where our students are at regarding the state, and that's my point.
Thank you all very much for taking time out of your school day to testify. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Superintendent Wormstead and Mr. Maelstrom. If you both want to come up. Superintendent, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Wayne Wormstead, Superintendent of Wyndham Schools, Chair Dabney and committee members, welcome to Wyndham. You've heard there's a tip of the iceberg of our school system and what's offered here and the quality of students we have. We have an amazing staff, and without our community support, we wouldn't be where we're at. You may know we passed a recent bond referendum for new elementary, career tech ed expansion, and those items. It's just a little piece of what happens. I want to touch on a few items here before I give a little bit of information on what you're hearing today for your bills. You've heard about college and the schools. The real frank matter, the issue is we save our parents $375,000 in tuition a year. We offer 43 credits in our school with our staff, paying to train our staff to get up to the new college and the school standards. We could spend a lot of time talking about that, but that vote may have floated already on us on what's going to take place there. Now, through the community, we've seen a lot of effort to expand our career and technical. So what we've seen is our efforts to match three areas in our workforce development, with our intro to medical careers, which is done at the Wyndham Hospital, our intro to manufacturing engineering done at Fast Global Systems, and then also our intro to education program. And as you're seeing, we're going to have to grow our own. In Minnesota, we need to connect to those who want to be part of rural America. And if we aren't willing to see that and grow that, we're going to be in a bigger issue in 10 years than we think we are right now. For the second year in a row, I want to add something that our school board did is we actually eliminated activity fees for our students grades 7 through 9. So if you're in any activity, it costs you nothing grades 7 through 9, and we charge a whopping $10 per activity for the sophomore through seniors program. Our goal is to eliminate barriers for kids to participate in a great activity and program that builds culture and climate. Also with that, the board has eliminated the entry fee for GATE for our students K-12. We want to invite all kids to come regardless of background and economics. $2, $3, $4 should not keep you from being part of a student activity. With that, we've seen a lot more attendance. It's only our second year. We're going to be tracking the data to see how big of an impact that happens for all of our students across the board. Talking about issues that we have in our school district, and you've heard this many times, probably cross-subsidies. I think I was asked quite a bit during the tour, different things there. But realistically, when you look at our cross-subsidy, just special education and for our ELL program, English Second Language program, it's $900,000 crossover. So when you take that and really tie that down, it's $913 per pupil referendum we have that was voted on and approved. We currently, in those two programs, are spending $857. Now, if you look what our school board member, Joel Bordick, will talk about a little bit later, our safety and security we've done, we've increased our counselors and social workers, doubled it, and added an SRO. When you add those items in right there, our per pupil expenditure in those three areas for a safe, secure school with mental health, talking about our ESL and our special ed, we're at about $1,150 per pupil unit. So we're overspending even our operating referendum through that process. So that comes to, you know, sustainability, and can we actually continue this pattern without continually going back? And that's why I'm glad you're talking about the two bills you are today about equalization, equity, and how we spend our dollars across the state so we're not don't fund areas by zip code. What I really want to talk about also is appreciation for the foresight of your committee and the legislature for Ag to School. I'll be honest with you, without the Ag to School tax credit, we probably would not have passed our school bond issue. Over 56% of our land is actually in ag. is an insurmountable, and our neighboring districts is even a larger impact. We have some manufacturing, some other sources. We have neighboring districts that are 80%+ ag land base. So it's a heavy tax burden that. I do want to thank you also about bringing these two bills forward, but I have a couple little pieces I'd like to just add to that. I know it's early in the discussion with this. When you look at House File 1142 and 1143, I'd like you to see, look at the model fit towards ag to school. I really believe it's on the great track of what you're trying to do, without a doubt. The reason I say that is, let's not hold accountable by student population. And the reason why not student population, every district's a different size. The second thing is ag to school is very transparent. On your tax statement, for those landowners, they see the tax credit. We make it as simple and clear as possible for our taxpayers. And that is very important for them, because then they see the bang for the buck that you guys have done and the hard work that's paid off for that. I'm going to stop here because I saw my sign for that and a few more things. But thank you for the time, and I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, Superintendent. Mr. Melstrom, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Okay, thank you. I'm Tim Melstrom, and I'm social studies teacher, middle school, one class of high schoolers as well. Mr. Chair and Education Finance Committee, want to talk a little bit about our QCOMP program that we have here in Windham. Right now I'm the chair of our QCOMP committee, and I guess I want to share a little bit of my experience since I've been here. I'm just like a couple of the other students that talked about being new here. This is my sixth year here. I had 17 years of previous teaching experience. And when I came here, under their QCOMP program, I was provided a mentor to kind of guide me through the whole process of the culture and what was going on here in Windham Schools. Simple things from figuring out the grade book systems that they have here, those types of things to make my life a little bit easier as a new teacher to the district. And so looking at the opportunities with our mentor induction program where we bring in these new teachers, the importance of having this program, whether it's somebody that's new right out of college or somebody that's just new to the district, very important for our school and our QCOMP program to retain a lot of these teachers that are new right out of college. We want these guys to stay around and be a part of our district. And so part of the one part of our QCOMP program is just that, our mentoring program. Some other things that we do with our QCOMP program is the PLC communities, where we are aligned both vertically and horizontally to work with people within our department and also different grade levels as well. So we have a little bit of department stuff, and then we work with people within our grade. So the middle school teachers get together, our high school teachers get together, and so forth. So it's an opportunity for us to really share some of the same experiences that we're having, talk about some of the kids and some of the things that are taking place in our classrooms, and giving that positive experience that's going on in our classrooms. Also, the past 2 years, I've had the opportunity to be a teacher leader at the middle school, high school, and representing that position, where I've been conducting peer observations and getting into the different classrooms. And I will say that having that opportunity to see other teachers and what they're doing and being able to provide them feedback and also learn from them has been a tremendous experience for me as a teacher leader. So just going through some of the other things, the QCOMP committee as a whole is our kind of our guiding force for a lot of our professional development, that when we're looking at and setting our goals, whether it be the district, whether it's site, department, individual goals, our QCOMP committee is active in looking at data and setting forth our goals based on the data, and then putting forth a professional development plan that's really kind of job embedded, but also allowing for the opportunity for people to get outside and find other experiences and other conferences where they can pick up the best practice teachings that are out there. Once again, I guess QCOMP, overarching program that we have here, allowed staff to receive the professional development that they need to be the best teachers that they possibly can be, which gives our kids a quality education. The QCOMP program, once again, very important, and I know that it's probably capped off with other schools being allowed in, but it is a great program, and I think it'd be an opportunity for other schools to maybe possibly get involved that are working towards some of the same things as far as getting basically a good quality education to our students in Minnesota. We've been lucky in Wyndham to be able to provide that for our students and our community. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Committee questions for Superintendent Wormstetter, Mr. Maelstrom. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if we can, if I may, continue that discussion on QCOM. Representative Yuokim and I both represent Hopkins District, part one of our school districts, and they were one of the first school actually to initiate the QCOM program. One thing they're looking at is that it seems that for them it's frozen, you know, the level of reimbursement for it from the state. Is that an issue here? And then also, if you wanted, I'd like to hear more about QCOM too. So it is capped. We're not adding more districts to the program. And if you think of other schools across the state, would you advise us to you know, look at that more seriously, having the opportunity for more schools to grow? And that was two questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me the.
All right. Superintendent, you've got the mic.
Two things. Yes, I believe the capping, and now we're getting prorated on the state aid portion for that. That does become an issue as you start implementing long-range plans, and we're going. And I know there's more students in the schools that have QCOM, so that may be continue if there's no funds. I do believe it is a valuable tool because it's teacher-led with the school board administration together, because everybody has to work together to get it approved, puts people on the same page. You get a lot more communication than before with this typical 2% staff double and set aside. And so I think it's a great growth program to have ownership by both teachers, even paras, and your administration school board.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Next on my list is Tom Apple. Tom, I know you're here. And you've got some students with you? Very good. So thank you all for joining us. I think you've watched it so far. Please introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Lindsay Brockworth. Thank you, Chair and Committee. Today with me, I have four students from Montlake High School that are just going to share a little bit about their experiences there.
Thank you, Ms. Brockworth. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, I'm Alex Hernandez. Thanks for having me. I am a sophomore at Montlake. I am currently an active member in our school in FFA and extracurricular activities such as student council and one act. And that's about it, because you will not catch me doing sports. I do not do sports. In FFA, I do currently do job employment skills, where I practice employment skills. I'm hoping to go to state for that. For the past 3 years, I was on our FFA chapter's floriculture team, where we made it to nationals last year, and we proudly took fourth. It was a lot of fun. It opened up very fun opportunities that I probably would not have thought of to take if I was not in floriculture. I am very happy with how our school runs. All of our staff is very friendly. I think all of us are very close to all of our teachers. We trust them. We are not afraid to ask questions. And that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Hi. My name is Destiny Sivenhund, and I am a junior at the Mountain Lake Public High School. And I am a three-sport athlete, and I am actively involved in FFA. I am in the CDE food science, and that has really helped me in my life because I learn more about food and nutrition, so that'll help me in the long run for helping my body and keeping healthy so I can perform better during these sporty activities. I also like the FFA summer activities and the involvement I am in them. We can go to camps that has helped me better my leadership and help other students more, because they give me the confidence to be able to come and speak like I am today and try not to be nervous. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Delaney Jansen. Thank you for having me. I am a sophomore at Mountain Lake High. I'm currently involved in volleyball as well as the musical, The One Act Plays, and I'm an active member in my FFA. These activities keep me busy, but I still find time to be a good student, and that wouldn't be possible without the help from my great teachers. Having that one-on-one connection with them because of our small class sizes has really helped me gain a personal connection to them, which helps me in the long run. They've taught me things that I wouldn't be able to be taught outside. They teach me, they've brought me out of my shell. My speech teacher, she's always believed in me, and it's just been amazing how they just bring you out of your shell, and that one-on-one connection really helps me be a better student. I wouldn't have been in my one-act plays or my musical had it not been for my other teachers encouraging me to get out there, and I wouldn't be in FFA if it weren't for my advisor, Mrs. Brockberg. She's been wonderful, and she's gotten me into the small animals competition, which has been such a fun run. We have, my team made it to state last year, and we won state, and so, and then I went to nationals, national FFA for the nursery team, and that wouldn't have been possible without my other advisor, Mr. Funk, who believed in me to do it, to take that step and do that. I wouldn't be here talking if Mrs. Brockberg didn't think that I was better suited to talk to you guys about this. Having that connection, like I said, it's just amazing. And our small class sizes really helped me get an interpersonal connection with my different classmates. I've grown up in Mountain Lake, so I've known these people my whole life, which has just given me that personal connection where I can just talk to them about anything. Same with the teachers. They're there to teach me, but they've given me so much more than just the knowledge in the classroom. They've brought me out of my shell, and they just exposed me to so many things outside the classroom. I wouldn't think that FFA could have brought me to different places like small animals. I thought it was for farm kids, and that was just not me. So my FFA teacher, advisor, really bringing me out there and showing me that it's cool and it's fun, and it's brought me to different places. I went to St. Louis this past summer, and I've gotten to see so many different things. I've gone to camps and met so many different people, and just having that experience, it's so nice that I can rely on my teachers for anything. They help me through everything. They're not only teaching, they're like a friend. You can go with them for anything and ask advice, and they're going to be there. So that's just been a really amazing experience at my high school. So having those people there to support me, not only my family, but my teachers and my friends who I've known forever. It's just a really good support system that will take me through my college years. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Hi, I'm Regan Severson. I'm a senior at Mountain Lake High School, and I have really enjoyed being in a small school setting because I am very heavily involved. I'm a four-sport athlete. I'm in the drama, I'm in band and choir, I'm in student council, I'm in FFA, which is why I'm wearing official dress today, because it's FFA week and I'm an officer on the FFA team, so that's why I wore this today. And I just really think that being involved in a small school has allowed me to become well-rounded, and that my teachers have really helped me through that, and all my coaches through my different activities. They have helped me grow as a person, and if I wasn't involved in as much as I am, I don't believe that I would be making the choices I am as college, and I just really enjoyed the support from all my teachers and coaches.
Thank you very much. Representative Hewitt, you dropped the FFA bill recently?
Chair Dabney, I did, and this is just a simple ask. In any way, did I bribe you? Did I tell you to come up here or else? Do you know me?
No? Never. Okay. You've never met him before?
I just want the committee to know this, about the benefits of the future farmers.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Any other questions for the student panel? Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mostly just a comment. The last session I was on the Ag Finance Committee, and Representative Hamilton was the chair. And with all of the students that come to testify, but specifically the FFA students that come up to the Capitol, it is just as impressive as what you just heard here. Every time I hear them speak, I'm impressed, and I know that our future is in good hands. And to the parents here of all of the students that we've heard today, you should be proud. And I can tell you that coming here today, that we're impressed with what we're seeing with your kids.
Thank you. Mr. Apple, did you have anything to add?
Yes, if I could.
If you could do it on the microphone, please. And introduce yourself, please.
Yes, my name is Tom Apple, retired agriculture education instructor from Mountain Lake High School, so I'm not too far from some of these folks. Currently representing the Minnesota Association of Agricultural Educators today. My purpose in being here was, one, to introduce these students and make sure you can see what actually goes on in our schools in greater Minnesota. Secondly, I want to speak in support of any career and technical organization bills that are coming through your committee, and there will be three opportunities here in the coming weeks for you to act upon. Just want to go ahead and touch on those. I appreciated the testimony from the Wyndham student, Parker, I believe it was, to talk about manufacturing. So from a career and technical standpoint, just a little bit of information for the audience also. So when we talk career and technical education, we're talking the broad umbrella with agriculture, manufacturing, family consumer science, marketing, business education. We'll be speaking in support of all career and technical organizations at this point in time. We have three bills that I believe are going to make it through your committee or hopefully will be introduced. The first one is House File 1206. I believe Representative Marquardt has introduced that one. Currently, all of our career and technical programs in the state of Minnesota are eligible for a 35% local levy to help finance the cost of those programs. We're probably at a point in time where we need to look to that and see if that percentage can't be increased. The second one is the one that we now refer to as the FFA bill. I would like to, if we could, Representative, to change the title of that. That is FFA is a part of that bill, but that is, again, the overarching career and technical bill that covers all of the career and technical organizations. So agriculture, FFA, manufacturing, Skills USA, FCCLA, our former family consumer science, FCCCLA, that bill supports at the state level all of those organizations, the student organizations that are part of the individual career and technical disciplines. So,
thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for hearing
Thank you all for speaking to the committee today. I'm going to ask the next three people on my list who are non-Wyndham folks to come up and form a panel. I've got Loy Wolber, the superintendent from Westbrook Walnut Grove, Don Tiernick, a teacher from Worthington, and Cliff Carmody, the executive director of the Southwest West Central Service Co-op. And then we'll switch back to two last Wyndham speakers after that. I'll let you folks figure it out.
Okay.
All right, Ms. Tiernick?
Tiernick.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee. Thank you for having me. My name is Dawn Tiernick, and I'm a first grade teacher at Prairie Elementary in Worthington. This is my eighth year teaching and ninth year with the district. I also grew up in Worthington and went through the Worthington school system and have two children currently going through the schools in Worthington. I'm here to talk to you about our growing student population and our need for space and our struggles that we've had. My current classroom consists of 24 students. I have two students in special education, seven who are receiving reading intervention, 12 students who are receiving English language services. And the demographics at Prairie currently, we have 1,236 students currently enrolled last year, and that includes 75% ethnically diverse students, 50% English language learners, 12% special education students, and then 77% free and reduced students. And to meet the spectrum of needs for our diverse population, small group instruction is imperative for success. For those students who are pulled out of my room and classrooms like mine, they're taken to small learning areas. And many of these rooms used to be storage closets, book rooms. And over the past years, I've seen teacher planning areas teacher break rooms, computer labs turned into classrooms or areas for multiple interventions. At Prairie, there are 53 general education classrooms, along with ELL pullout rooms, small reading intervention rooms, often shared by multiple teachers, like I said, music rooms and gyms for grades K through 4. And our schools are running out of space for classrooms. Some of our interventionists are using carts to travel to areas of the school to work with students. And during transition times, the hallways are full of moving kids in all directions. Over the lunch period, there can be over 700 students transitioning in the main hallway when multiple grade levels are moving. Our cafeteria is not ideal for the number of students who need to get through the line and eat. For example, our fourth grade students don't get to eat lunch until 1 o'clock. And there's 250 of them. Our paraprofessionals are working in small groups in common areas, and they are using dividers to try to limit the distractions with traveling kids. It's hard for young students and often our neediest and most distractible learners to focus on the activity in front of them when so much is going around them. Under ESSA, we have been identified as a district of targeted support. With our continuous improvement efforts, it's hard to estimate the ripple effect of our space issues and overall learning and test scores. And to try to solve these problems, we've attempted 5 referendums to try to pass building referendums. Each of them have unfortunately failed. Every referendum has been a little different and decreased in the attempt to help pass them. Started out with intermediate school and community education to build on where current elementary school is and to do a remodel of the high school. That failed. 3 years later, we asked for a new high school with athletic field and then went to just a high school referendum. And then from there, voters were asked to vote on an intermediate school. And this last one failed by 17 votes. So that was very disheartening. We've done many things to attempt to come together and pass that. And the large farming community is feeling the heavy tax burden of, you know, with tariffs and the price of corn and beans. And later today, you will be hearing the HF 1142. This would help alleviate some of the property tax costs and hopefully help us pass a much-needed levy. So I thank you, Chair and committee members, for coming here and hearing about our struggles in Worthington.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Tearing. Superintendent, please state your name and proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Loy Wober, and I work at the Westbrook Walnut Grove and the Fulda and the Lake Benton school districts. And this is my 21st year as a superintendent, all in rural Minnesota, and enjoy the area. My wife and 5 kids, we live on a farm in between the 3 districts, so it works out very well. And any given week, when we talk about rural, I am able to interact and be in 8 different communities, 5 different counties, 2 different states, and I'll get to return back to home base at night to the farm. So Elkton, South Dakota is our tuition partner with Lake Benton Elementary. So it's kind of a unique relationship that we have. So these past 18 years, I've been at Westbrook Walnut Grove, and I've also been able to share my time with 5 different districts. It's kind of a model that's worked for us. I think that way nobody gets too sick of me, and they just keep pushing me around. So it works good. It's just a model that happens to work for a few districts, and I think that there's definitely disadvantages to it, but it's something that we found a little bit of a fit with so that we can keep full-time principals in our buildings where they need to be taking care of kids. So that's been very important. Staffing, I think, is something that's always been a concern that's been addressed before. The licensure issues, I've just wrapped up my 5 years on the Board of Teaching, Pelsby Board. So I'm done with that as the rural rep, and I hope and wish the best for them and for this tier licensure system. I think it's going to work well. Do not let go of alternative pathways. Make sure we keep that rolling along. That's always my fear, is that we kind of get back to being too rigid again, depending on the makeup of the board. And so for the 4 years, I think I, being a rural rep, I was the only one outside of Shakopee. And so you kind of get, we got to keep that out here as well. Thank you very much for the that bill. That worked out very well. Our schools, our little schools, I'm one section school and in all of them. And our success is based on any one given teacher at any time leaving and not being able to find a replacement. And so that's huge. Growing our own is what we, is the way we'll survive. And it's trying to get some of our parents to become teachers, get our graduates to come home. That's about the only way we're going to get the quality teachers back, is kids that want to come back home. Thank you very much for the long-term facility maintenance. That's been great. This makes me sad hearing your story, but, you know, we're, Westbrook Walnut Grove is the loosest, the most space of Southwest Minnesota, because we're two original high schools that consolidated in 2001. So we're at 475 square feet per kid, and they're at 158 square feet. So I just need to keep my buildings up, keep them in good shape, so I don't get into a pickle down the road. And so that long-term facility funding has been wonderful. I think all of us in the room share our concerns with the cost of special education. My son is autistic, and so I've been through this. But being in a little district in Walnut Grove Elementary, for instance, that's 261 kids. 20% of them are in special ed. We have 23 teachers in the building, but we have 20 paras in the building as management paras, just by chance that it happened to be there. So it's very important to us to keep that. Number one in my life, in my schools, is our kids' social emotional health. Number two is their physical health. Number three is the academics. So that kind of answers my thoughts on MCA testing. We are focused on these kids and trying to keep them healthy, and I'm glad that that's the discussions going on about mental health, because that's always going to be there, and that's a big priority for our little schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Mr. Carmody, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Cliff Carmody. I'm the Executive Director at Southwest West Central Service Cooperative. And I want to first and foremost thank the committee for coming to our region. It's not often that folks from St. Paul come out and listen to our challenges, and we really want to thank you for doing that. I also want to thank Superintendent Wormstead and the Windham Public Schools for hosting this event. It says a lot about your commitment to what we're trying to do. The other thing, having years ago, I was given the opportunity to attend a national FFA convention and watch those young people conduct a meeting. So if there's any questions about Robert's Rules of Order, we have experts. They'll be able to answer them, I'm certain. But I'm really here to talk to you today about the fastest growing student population in our region, and that's students with what we call special behavioral disorders, autism, mental health, and the like. We, on behalf of our membership, we administer what we call Learning Center programs. In 2017, we started on a facility study to determine how we could make sure that our programs were accessible and that they were affordable and that the facilities that we were using were appropriate for the students that come to our learning centers from our schools. At that time, we identified between $40 and $50 million of infrastructure needs that we would have for five facilities. We will have a sixth facility in Montevideo next year. We were able to partner with the city and the EDA of Montevideo and the school district, and we will they are building a facility for us that we will be leasing them to serve students. So we will have six centers. I also want to thank the legislature. A year ago, Atwater Cosmos Grove City was awarded a $5 million grant from the state to repurpose an elementary building. There, whenever I talk about this with my superintendent colleagues, very often they offer me a facility. They say, we have a building that you can use for your programs. The problem with that is their facilities often come with a price tag of repurposing, a price tag of long-term facility needs and need maintenance that need to be done, and the like. We don't have the tools that we need in rural Minnesota when it comes to facilities to make this work for these students. The $5 million grant a year ago was a start. We are sitting in Wyndham, where we have collaborated with the Wyndham Public Schools on these programs for years. They have been able to pass a referendum to build a new elementary school. We currently are, I think, in their oldest of the buildings that they have, and we're going to move up into their less old building, but that building also has needs, and we're likely to come to the legislature and ask for some additional resources to bring that building to the point where it's appropriate for the students that will be attending there. And so it's important for me to represent that group of students. We've found that if we have the availability of staff, we have the availability of classrooms, that we fill those classrooms. We have about 235 students today with about 25 on a waiting list that we're not able to serve at this particular point in time due to lack of space or lack of staff. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the committee, from the committee for the panel?
I think you covered it.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. The last portion of this part of the committee hearing, we're coming back to Wyndham with Lee Carlson and Joel Broadwick?
Bordewick.
Who's up first? All right, Mr. Bordewick, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Joel Bordewick. I am vice chair of the Wyndham School Board. Thank you for coming. I'm sure you have a lot of priorities, and they're all heavily competitive, so your commitment to make this happen, and Ms. Burt for making this happen, thank you. It is an honor to have you here. I have a bunch of notes. Everything's been covered. I am very glad that we are, as our communities are working together, that we all have a lot of the same topics. So I'm going to jump through my notes and kind of cover some of the points that they covered that I think are very important.
Mr. Bordewick, we do have a statement in the legislature that everything's been said, but not everyone has said it. So, you know,
perfect. <it's>,
please proceed.
Excellent.
Good.
So you've listened to a lot of people, and I'm sure you can see why we are so incredibly proud. Listen to those student speakers. I mean, we are very proud of our community, our students, our staff. And we know that it's dictated by the commitment and collaboration of the staff in our local communities, our local government that represents us at state. And that recent success is a testament, or we have a recent success that's a testament to that, and that's a passing of a bond, a $24 million bond. And as Ms. Tiering mentioned, that's a very scary process to enter. You don't know what the outcome is. And it took a lot of collaboration. As Executive Director Carmody said, they are working with us in one of the buildings that we'll be vacating that isn't big enough to house our elementary school. And a very large part of it was the Ag to School tax credit, a massive part of it. That's a 40% tax credit from the state on our ag land. Our ag land is 56.6% of our tax base. So we were able to send out documentation to our community to show them the opportunity that we had from the state and how much of an impact that'll have on our building project. And it allowed us to pass a bill, to pass a bond that let us build a school to put our K through five together in one building to separate them out, and also to spend $2 million on a CTE to expand our CTE center. And there's been a lot of talk about that. And as a local employer, I can also attest to how difficult it is to retain these students, these amazing students, to keep them here. And they talked about just the education, that they know what jobs are here, and to have that skill set started here so they can see the economic and skill opportunities in careers right here at home. And as Wayne attested to, another financial strain or another area we've had to have a lot of financial touches with school safety. He mentioned some of the areas where we've had to spend $1 million since 2012. We did put together a $5,000 grant request last year. Unfortunately, a lot of schools did, and funding ran out before the opportunities did. So we're anxious as we hear about these bills and things that are coming to find avenues to help create a safe and responsible place to educate our students. So thank you again for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Bordewick. Mr. Carlson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Lee Carlson. I teach high school English here on the CIS classes. And I also want to say appreciation to Honorable Chair Dabney and all the representatives on the committee and to all our visitors, too, and especially to Wayne for putting all this together and all the other people. I also like to thank Mr. Bordewick for his son Ethan that's in my class. I enjoy him very much. Great opportunity here.
Don't worry about that.
No, you don't need to worry. He's a great one. Supporting our students takes work. I tell my students and players that effort is visible. It's not a matter of opinion. So over my 30 years as a teacher and coach, the political aspect of our work that we do in the schools has greatly increased. And I don't think that's always a good thing. Too often the outcomes that impact our students and our schools are based upon opinion, not upon visible factors. So I appreciate you coming here to visibly see what the effects are and meet the people that are being impacted by your decisions. I know it's not easy. I'm on several state boards, so I know that takes time to get from this point to that point, so you coming here is very, very much appreciated. And when you make that work visible in a new way like this, you create trust too, which means we can get things done quicker. So thank you very much. At different times, I've served on MDE committees, work groups, and task forces. Many times, I was the only teacher in that group. Many times, I was the only person from Greater Minnesota. And I know that process when we have those groups that work together, they send recommendations, and those recommendations are often considered by you as you create legislation, which comes back and impacts our schools. And if I was the only teacher there or the only person from Greater Minnesota, I think the more awareness there is about recognizing that and trying to find other ways to gather input from those representative components is going to be important to make sure we're getting recognized for what we're doing here and what's going to fit that to support our kids.
So, Dosher, please report to Student Services. Jaden Dosher, please report to Student Services.
So thank you for recognizing that. And again, thanks for picking Wyndham High School here. This is my first year teaching here. It's my 30th year, but I want to acknowledge that they are doing great things here. That's why I'm here. That's why after 29 years I chose to leave a classroom where I had all the textbooks memorized and knew everything exactly where it was to come and be a first-year teacher again.
Brian Espinosa, please report to Student Services. Brian Espinosa, please report to Student Services.
Does that count as my time, too? but what you're hearing, though, is that we have student support services. And that's been a commitment by this district that isn't necessarily required to have, but they recognize how important it is. Lloyd talked about the emotional needs of our students, and here they have a person in every building that's there to support that, and multiple layers of support. And I can see that is really important to our students. So I give them kudos for that. I want to address one of the questions. There was a couple questions along the line of with Eliana talking about being a teacher. A little while ago, I had somebody ask me, you're your teacher, and then they said, I want to ask you, it was somebody with education, so they said, I want to ask you with your teacher prep, what did they, first day they said, well, what do you do to build relationships? I talked about the different things I do, which was really important this year, being a new school with 170 some kids a day that I didn't know. So I talked about it, she said, where did you learn that? Was that teacher prep? I said, no. First, you make a lot of mistakes, and then you talk to other people, and so I think when you talk about what's going to get people into teaching, I don't think anybody goes into it thinking they're going to get rich, okay? But they hear these stories about, you know, when that light bulb goes on or those relationships that these kids all talked about as being so important, but you don't get that in teacher prep. It's really hard to quantify, but it's the reason you stay in teaching. And I think I actually qualify for the rule of 90, but there's coming a time where there's a lot of people that don't. And I think there was a reason why every other state in the union has it and why we had it. And a lot of that's getting pushed down to local districts to try and deal with that issue when that occurs. But when I started, there was all these retired teachers that talked about, you know, it's going to be challenging and all that, but it's a really good retirement. And so that kind of made you look at it more as a career than I think a lot of people do now when they don't hear that. We've got a shortage of teachers. We also have a shortage of retirees, I think, that are helping people recognize it as a career. So I know we're not going to fix that all real soon, but I mean, we're coming to that point where it's going to be a major issue. So I wanted to get that out on the way there too. So I don't have a magic answer about how to help people understand those relationships, but I think that's an important thing as we look at teacher prep. what can we do to start trying to quantify that, to connect the stories maybe you're hearing from students and teachers to those people in teacher prep programs better than when I was student teaching and helping out Representative Marquardt.
All right.
I'm glad he came to my classroom. So I'm also the MRA president, so I want to thank Fred Nolan for his work, too, that they're doing at the Capitol. You know our process. We have four zones, and there's a teacher, a school board member, an administrator from each zone. So at our meetings, we've got those all levels. There aren't many times where I have opportunity to be part of that kind of setting, so I appreciate. I know many of you have education backgrounds and see through that lens as well, so thank you for the work that you're doing.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. This is a public hearing. Are any questions from committee members? Representative Sandell.
Chair Davide, thank you very much, Mr. Carlson. I thought I heard you say you had 177 students a day. Was that correct?
Mr. Carlson?
I have 170-some. So I'm sorry, I didn't see it.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, sir. Is that in five sections or six sections? And is that an average of enrollment across the high school?
Mr. Carlson.
I'm new, so I'm not exactly sure about the average across. I try and take care of my job. I'm actually on academic overload, so that's seven courses. But I teach English, including the CIS classes, which very important too. You heard about that. For kids to take a class in a building they're familiar with, what teachers are familiar with, especially our students of color or other people who may be first generational students, to find out they can do that level of work, they're going to go to a campus and know that they belong there and they're going to stay there. So it's been challenging. I feel like sometimes I'm managing more than I really am able to teach as deep as I would like to. So when you hear about class sizes and you connect that to the social emotional needs of our students, and those relationships they talked about, if you got 40-some kids in a classroom, and even 30-some, you're it's really hard to get around and do what you know you need to do and what those kids need. So thank you for the question.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. With that, thank you both very much. Appreciate your time. This is a public hearing. We've invited the public who may wish to come and testify before the committee to do so. We're asking so that we can hear a breadth of voices, that members of the public limit their comments to 2 minutes. I do have a short list of individuals who've previously contacted Ms. Burt to testify. If they would please come forward, Lyndon Olson, Sherry Broderus, and Luann Alexander. If the three of you are here, come on up. You've seen this done. Mr. Olson, why don't you grab that microphone, introduce yourself, and proceed with your testimony, sir. Thank you.
Chairman Dabney, committee members, and Representative Hamilton. I'm Lyndon Olson, a school board member starting my 15th year on the Worthington School Board. Over my years of service, I've been increasingly aware of the inequity in funding public schools in Minnesota, and for the short time I have this afternoon, I'll focus on the inequity in local property taxes to support local school districts. All of the figures I will use this afternoon have been prepared for me from Minnesota Department of Education sources by R.W. Baird, a firm providing financing consulting services to many local government bodies. The first area of inequity is bond referendums. I'm going to use the cost of a residential homestead with a market value of $150,000 on a bond equaling $15,000 per pupil. For a district of 1,000 students, that bond would be for $15 million. A district of 3,000 pupils, the bond would be for $45 million. The yearly cost would vary from $35 to $558 in different districts across the state with an average of 224. That's a difference magnitude of 16. The magnitude of difference will be the same for different property classifications, only the dollar values would change. In the second area of levy referendums, difference is not as large, a magnitude of 3. Now comes for me what was a real shocker. According to MDE data, the estimated market value of the average residential home in Minnesota is $211,800. The total of all school property taxes on the average residential homestead would vary from $122 to $3,264 with an average of 870. That's a difference magnitude of 27. Even if we throw out the high and low outliers, the variance is from 215 to 2,240 with a magnitude of 10. Many mistakenly believe that this inequity is a rural versus urban problem, but it is not. It is a property-rich versus a property-poor problem. For example, Russell Tyler Ruthven, a district just 60 miles northwest of here, has a total tax on that average residential home of $349, while in Fulda District, just 45 miles away, the total is $1,703. St. Cloud pays $787. St. Paul pays $1,044. I could bore you with many more examples, but I think you get the picture. There are gross inequities across Minnesota school districts striving to provide the same quality education to every student in Minnesota. These disparities certainly do not fit with the One Minnesota goal. But these disparities are large, they would become even larger if the average household income were layered on top of the figures I presented. I could not find the average household income by school district, but county figures from the U.S. Census show some counties in Minnesota with twice the average household income of others. I believe I've shown that the enormous inequities and disparities exist using local property taxes to fund public education in Minnesota. In order to create some semblance of equity, a major change in school funding is necessary. Thank you, Mr. Dabney, and I would be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Representative Broders, welcome to the committee. Or did I just call you representative? My apologies. Superintendent, my apologies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members for having me. I am proud to be a Wyndham High School graduate of 1977. Once an eagle, always an eagle.
All right.
But now I am a superintendent at McRae Public School. I've been there for 1 year, and this fall, we are going to be in the very unenviable position of asking our voters for a referendum and to continue our operating levy. We have, at McRae, have failed three referendum votes in the last 5 years. The first two votes were for a one-school system. And then the people said, no, we want to keep all three of our schools open. So we went, okay, we'll plan a referendum for all three schools to be open, and they failed that. So I am here to just encourage House Bill 116 that says that possibly a board this fall could please have the local authority to continue a operating levy and use their authority to do it without going to the voters, with a good amount of education to the voters first. So that's what we're asking for. We are seriously looking for an auditorium for our kids. I watched a play this fall, beautiful play with the big McRae M in the middle, and I forgot I was supposed to be on a deserted island. I watched CTE facilities built in 1965. Those are not state-of-the-art. Those are not industry-standard facilities. STEM classes, no room. We've got overcrowding going on. And school safety, we didn't get one of the nod for the funding last year. So that's our ardent passion, is that House Bill 116 would be able to fly with or dropped, is that the word? to allow our board to approve that operating levy. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. We did hear that bill earlier this week to allow boards to continue a levy at the same level as it currently exists.
Yes.
So we did have a robust conversation about that earlier this week. Ms. Alexander, yes. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Luann Alexander, and I am administrative assistant to the high school principal and athletic director at GFW. GFW stands for Gibbon, Fairfax, and Winthrop. Our current high school enrollment in grades 9 through 12 is 250. We offer 62 different classes in all the required and elective areas. We employ 22 teachers and 11 support staff at the high school level. Our district is having a very hard time hiring qualified teachers due to pay scales that can't compete with urban pay scales and rural locations that are less desirable for many. Over the past 3 years, we've had to hire individuals who do not have a teaching license, and this has impacted our student achievement. We are proof that having a college degree without training in education does not make you a qualified, effective teacher. Our students are paying the price. In the last 2 months, we have had 4 paraprofessionals quit because they can no longer afford to work at GFW, and we are finding it extremely difficult to fill these positions. Now, just because we are a small school and have fewer students doesn't mean we have fewer expenses. An example, you have one piece of science equipment that costs hundreds of dollars. The cost is the same no matter how many students you have in your class, and irregularities in funding between rural and urban areas is something that needs to be addressed so we have the same advantages. Our district just had to borrow $1 million to get us through the remainder of the school year. The trickle-down effect of this will be less money for classroom instruction and very little money available to put on salaries, putting us farther and farther behind, attracting less and less. We are a district that has limited corporate benefactors and a very small business base, which puts a large tax burden on area farmers. We need your help. We need creative ideas to bridge the gap between rural and urban areas, because both areas are vitally important to the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Alexander. Questions from the members? Thank you all. Appreciate it. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify? Anyone else? Seeing none, we'll move to the first of the two bills we'll be hearing today, Representative Hewitt. And I know Mr. Lundell, if you would please come forward. Representative Hewitt, would you like to move that House File 1143 be before the committee and considered for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
Mr. Chair, I would.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. With that, please proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for hearing this bill today. One of our values is that all our children receive a quality, high quality and good education, along with making sure that Minnesota prospers at the same time. This bill will help a little bit with that. The referendum revenue program often referred to as operating referendum levy, or the excise levy referendum, is a mechanism that allows our school districts to obtain voter approval to increase its general fund revenue beyond the limits set in statute. The ballot question for an operating referendum asks the voters to approve a dollar amount per pupil, and that amount may be approved for and up to 10 years at a time. The total referendum per pupil amount is capped unless the school district is eligible for sparsity revenue, in which case the revenue cap does not apply. Operating referendum levies are calculated and spread on referendum market value tax base that does not include agricultural lands or seasonal recreational property. The Operating Referendum Equalization Aid Program is divided into 3 tiers. The first tier, $300 per pupil, is in the tier 1 and is equalized at $880,000. The next is $460 per pupil, is tier 2 and is equalized at $510,000. Amounts above $760 per pupil are equalized above $290,000. House File 1142 increases the first tier, equalizing the factor to $880,000 to $920,000, increasing the second tier, equalizing the factor from $510,000 to $740,000. These changes are estimated to increase the state aid program roughly around $50 million per year and reduce the referendum levy by the same amount. Mr. Chair, I do have a testifier with me today that can explain more about the referendum.
Thank you very much, Representative Hewitt. Mr. Lundell, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell, Executive Director of Schools for Equity and Education. Really want to thank Representative Hewitt and the committee for Representative Hewitt for dropping the bill, and then the committee for hearing the bill. Really happy to be out here today in Windham, and thanks to Superintendent Wernstedt and the Windham community for having us out. What this bill basically does is the referendum equalization program was started in 1991. outside of the addition of the first tier, the first 300 of board-approved referendum levy with the higher equalizing factor, and the addition of the third tier, that basic second-tier equalization factor has not been changed since 1993. It looks different because there was a change in how pupils were counted, and there's also been a couple of changes in how adjusted net tax capacity and a couple of other things played into the change. But for the most part, that second tier of the referendum equalization has not been changed. And so what we're looking for is trying to bring that back closer to where it was in real terms, back to where it was in the 1990s when it was first passed. I did notice in the governor's budget document that he did talk a little bit about referendum equalization. We didn't see a proposal for increased referendum equalization, but he talked about how the gap between the 5th and 95th is now going up again. And the reason he said why the gap was going up is because property wealth differences exist throughout the state. How to narrow that gap is going to be a way districts are going to do that. Districts are going to have to find a way at the bottom, and the way that that exists right now is through passing additional referendum levy, and without increasing the second tier referendum equalization factors, it becomes very, very difficult, as Mr. Olson pointed out in his testimony, for those districts to get a fair shake. And so that's what we're trying to do with this bill, and we certainly will work with you and other decision makers as we move forward during the session.
Thank you, Mr. Lundell. Questions from the committee for either the author or Mr. Lundell? Again, this is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House File 1143? Incredibly persuasive, apparently.
It was my work.
Representative Hewitt, do you have any closing comments?
I do, Your Honor. Mr. Chair, I do.
Thank you.
Increasing the equalization factor for the operating revenue levy increases the first tier equalization factor from 880 to 920, increases the second equalization factor from 510 to 740,000. Leaves the third tier equalization factor unchanged. Mr. Chair, I would like to move the bill.
Thank you very much. With that, House File 1143 is laid over. Representative Marquardt? Representative Marquardt is also the chair of the Tax Committee, and as you may have picked up, these are heavily tax issues. Do you wish to see it? How should we proceed?
Well, Mr. Chair, it just depends whether or not you want that in your target or my target.
With that, Representative Hewitt renews his motion that House File 1143 be moved to Ways and Means with a further recommendation that it be referred to the Tax Committee. Thank you, Representative Marquardt.
You didn't leave St. Paul today, did
you? Not at all. All right. Thank you both. Next on our agenda is Representative Tabke's House File 1142. Representative Tabke is not a member of the committee, but was good enough to get on the bus with us this morning and come to Wyndham to present the bill. Representative Tabke, as you are not a member of the committee, I will move that House File 1142 be referred to Ways and Means, and with a recommendation that it be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. With that, please proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for letting me tag along today. I appreciate being here with everyone. This is a really important bill, and there are a lot of great things that are going on with it, and as I think I don't need to say a whole lot about it because we've heard from many testifiers today regarding the need for this type of bill to help to equalize and to help districts that have high debt levies as well as lower school property tax being brought in that makes their tax rates incredibly high. And this bill will help to equalize that across the state of Minnesota. And as as Mr. Chair began this hearing today with every child in Minnesota deserves a world-class education, this very much helps to build into that. So this debt service equalization bill was first passed in 1991 and was fully implemented in 1994. And at that time, for all of the debt service across the state of Minnesota, it covered about 12% of all the school district's debt service. And today, that covers about 2%, a little over 2% of the debt service. And so there has been a massive change in how this has worked over time. And so what this bill will help to equalize that across the states. And I also have the extraordinary Mr. Lindell here to help fill in the gaps where I missed as to exactly how this bill will work. I missed saying one thing, that this bill also works to simplify how this program moves forward. It removes one of the tiers and makes it a lot easier to implement and understand what's going on, despite how I explained it. So, Mr. Lindell.
Thank you, Representative Tabke. Mr. Lindell, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tabke is a freshman, so I guess extraordinary is a low bar at this point. Like the referendum equalization piece, this basically updates equalization factors that really haven't kept up with the growth in property wealth throughout the state. Unlike the with the as in the case of the referendum equalization program, there have been some changes made here. A lot of it had to do the thresholds changed because of the changes in the ANTC when those rates were compressed, and also I think in as part of the governor's Ventura's big plan back in 2001, there was a second tier added to the debt service equalization, or a third tier added to the debt service equalization. I wanted to also mention, though, that, you know, picking up on Superintendent Wormstead's comments, this is needs to be viewed as in conjunction with the Ag Bond credit. I think that the Ag Bond credit, again, with smaller school districts with heavy, heavy percentages of ag property, you're never going to get the equalizing factor up high enough to help those districts, because simply it's based on a denominator. If your denominator is small and your numerator is big, and the equalizing factor is a constant, you're going to have an equalizing factor that's way, way too big, and that's going to cost a lot of money. So the Ag Bond credit does work to zero in onto those districts that have very high high concentrations of ag property, and we certainly want to we support that as well, and we certainly want to, as we move forward, to keep that in mind again in the coming session.
Thank you, Mr. Lindell. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House File 1142? Seeing none. Questions from the committee members?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Marquardt.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dabney, thank you for bringing the committee out to rural Minnesota. I really, really appreciate that. And the testimony we've heard from superintendents and school board members and so forth have laid this out, is that there is this huge inequity. It tends to really hit rural Minnesota on the debt service part, not so much on the operating referendum, on the debt service. And you've heard where many of these school districts are trying to expand, and you've got all sorts of needs, the career tech, which is really the area we have to be moving towards. So they're looking to expand buildings, and it's very, very difficult. And this bill would go a long ways in helping even the playing field, so it's not determined by zip codes, as the superintendent mentioned, but also that ag to the farm credit, or that ag school bonding credit, is really crucial. And we know the statistics bear that out, where in rural Minnesota, on the debt service, those votes pass at a much lower level than they do in the metro. And I've had people ask me, well, farmers only make up a small percent of the voting population, so why would that prevent a vote from going through? And in my school district of Dilworth, Glen, and Felton, neighboring one of Barnesville, we've had bond issues that have failed. And what I see is it becomes a conflict in the community, and a lot of my former students are farmers, and they support education just as much as anyone else. But because of the farm economy, and when you are picking up 60, 70, 80, 90% of the tab, we have put ag land and farmers in such an untenable, unfair position that even with 100% support, which they do, they can't support this economically. And that really makes a difference. And also, people in town who may be only one or two generations off the farm, they also see this inherent unfairness. and vote no also. And so that is really a big issue. And, you know, I think we need to expand that. The 40% is really good. But along with this, as Mr. Lundell said, I think they kind of go in hand in hand. And so I do appreciate the testimony here and Chair Dabney bringing the committee out here, because this is a huge issue. And I think no matter, as a student, where you live in this state, you should have the same opportunity to top-notch, world-class facility as someone anywhere else in the state. So it's not, when you talk about the ag to school credit, it's not just a farm property tax issue, it's a school equity excellence issue also. And so thank you for bringing this forward, and just, I'm so pleased we're having this discussion on this really important topic. And again, thanks for all the great testimony we heard that I think really laid this concern out today.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much, Representative Marquardt, for all of your support of this bill. It is really great to have you on board with us to help get this done. I also want to add to that as well, for there are many districts that are in the suburban ring, especially of the metro, that have experienced tremendous amounts of growth over the course of the last decade or two decades, like my community of Shakopee, that will see significant benefit, because there's been huge pressures on our school districts for building, just because there has been exponential growth in many of the communities, and this will help a significant number of suburban communities that have a lot of debt service that they're handling to continue to prosper as well. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you. It's good when you make mistakes that there's someone around to point out your errors. With the change in the procedure for where these bills are traveling, we do require a vote. So what we'll do, the FFA parliamentarians in the room, watch this. What we will do is we'll vote on Representative Tabke's bill. Then Representative Hewitt will bring your bill back up, vote on that, and send it on its way. So with that, Representative Tab, or I renew my motion that House File 1142 be referred, be returned to Ways and Means, with a further recommendation that it be referred onto the Committee on Taxes. With that, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Tabke. Representative Hewitt, would you like to move that House File 1143 be referred to Ways and Means with a recommendation that it be re-referred from there to the Committee on Taxes?
I would, Chair.
Right. With that motion before us, is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Hewitt motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. With that, I again want to thank the superintendent and the community of Windham for so graciously hosting us today. Let's not forget the lunch ladies who fed the committee today. It has been a pleasure for the committee to be here and to hear the community voices from Southwest Minnesota. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for hosting us. With that, members, we are adjourned.